Yeah, I learn.
I'm still chewing.
Hi, welcome to Sibling Scribbles.
My name's John.
The sibling podcast for the creative process.
Oh my gosh, I have a cheese stick stuck in my throat. Do that.
That's why I saved mine.
Great, now I have to do the intro. All right. Well, welcome to episode 10.
Hooray!
I'm actually, I don't mean to go on and on about this, but most podcasts die before this point, and we are stubborn, and also have 32 downloads, so take that. So we are talking today about an experience Marin had.
Traumatic. Life-altering and life-ending.
Life-ending.
Yes.
please elaborate.
Today we're talking about, actually, we should say after the story.
Tell the story.
So, once upon a time, I go running. I run around South Campus, just kind of like the area I'm in, and I see these posters. Are these little flyers, and they have little rip-off things, and there is this symbol of a cat. And I'm like, okay, lost cat, that's cool. And then I see these pink, like, spray-painted circles, and then there's a silhouette of a cat inside of that. And I'm like, oh, it must be, like, the feminists, you know, they're at it again. And because, you know, like they wear like the pussy hats.
Right.
And so I'm like, oh, that must be what it is. And I never read the flyers, didn't really care. Then I was at the West Campus High School and I was walking down the hallway after class and saw the flyers again, and they were everywhere, like actually everywhere. And I was like, oh, okay.
They how really they, love their cat.
How did they break in? but they, then I realized that it said like WCC on it. And I was like, oh, what the? So I went and was just walking around, and I went to class. And then after class, I was walking back out to my car and I saw on like one of those foldable, the floor is slippery things.
Yeah.
What are those things called?
I think that's the proper name.
Okay,
you got it.
The foldable slippery things. And
the Bon Jovi, the slippery when wet.
But it had, you know, instead of it said the floor is slippery, it said like, yeah, the cat thing. And so I walked in and on, you know, a big wall, and it says like, you know, this is my love letter to Provo. And I was like, oh, that's so great. This was a mystery. I solved the mystery. I saw the things. I watched, you know, this person vandalize, you know, concrete. And
it led you to this art gallery.
I was like, this is cool.
Yeah.
This is cool. And I'm like, this has got to be like pretty interesting.
Right.
If they're going to go as far as to like vandalize and, you know, put up posters everywhere. Right. I walk in. I read the walls, and I'm like, there's got to be something cool here, you know. And it was just a bunch of pictures of cats. It was not even different pictures of cats. It was one painting that was done in different media over and over and over again. And that was it.
And then Marin texts me in the middle of the workday, just furious.
So
just
pissed.
You're not gonna believe what just happened to me. Like I have been bamboozled.
I truly like solved this mystery. I'm like, now that is good, you know, like advertising for this art gallery.
Right.
I'm so sad.
So today asking the question, if I don't make it the title. We're asking the question, what is art?
What is it?
What? That was just a mournful, like, what is it? Like you're asking a doctor for the diagnosis, like, please talk, what is it?
Fix me, doc. I'll do anything.
It's too late. You ate too many gummy lifesavers.
No.
Nothing can save your life now.
No. Yeah. so.
Do you think doctors in Australia laugh when someone?
Oh no!
That's bad. You're not gonna say it. Okay.
You can cut it out.
Yeah.
It's cancer.
Tarsticular cancer. Okay, I'm gonna clap and that's where we're gonna cut. Ready?
No, don't clap, it was good.
Oh man, we're never gonna get a sponsor. This is sponsored by Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve.
No.
The only people that'll sponsor us anymore.
Sponsored by cheese sticks.
Sponsored by just
cheese,
in general.
But it's in a stick.
How'd they do it? So we are asking the question that everybody has asked, mm-hmm. which is, what the crud is this? Or like, what is art?
Yeah. I was like, let's come up with a brainstorm before we start the show, just so that we don't go off on a rant like we always do. That didn't work.
We immediately tangented so hard. I'm not going to get into it. But what we did talk about was how modern art is very much this. It's been happening for a very long time, a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch White Christmas, there is the scene.
Yes.
They're not doing dance. They're doing choreography.
Yes.
Right? So
or like in Hello, Dolly, where like we don't ride.
We walk. Right. Things being fashionable is very different from things being marketable, which is very different from things being even pleasant to look at. Right. So we have been struggling with this, with modern art in all medias, in all forms, yeah. and all mediums for maybe like 100 years. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So why what are we doing here?
Because we were talking about this and it's like, look, there are entire museums or sections of really nice museums with actual art in them,
mm-hmm.
that are full of modern art, which is actual garbage. It's so garbage that like everybody, it's like, oh, it must mean something. The juxtaposition. It's like, you don't need to put it in a gallery. Just go, like, live life or, like, visit New York City. Like, if you want to look at garbage.
Right. If you want to see a brown smear across a white canvas, you can just go to New York City.
You can just go to New York City.
You'll find it somewhere.
Yeah. Any major city in your area, you will find it.
But it's so modern art exists.
Mm-hmm.
Because of art is a reflection of philosophy. Philosophy is a reflection of art, right? It's all, yep. one big mess of a ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big pizza ball. And
ooh.
I love a pizza ball.
But I don't even know what that is.
It's just a pizza in a ball.
Ooh, how did they do it?
Modern art is kind of stems from these ideas that we started to have, thanks to French philosophers, among other people, where it is this question of do we need form? Do we need structure? Do we need objectivity, right? Is art not more than just a simple expression of oneself? Is art...
That was beautiful.
Right. Well, I took a dance class my freshman year of college, and it was like 7 a.m. class. But
oh my gosh.
Well, I took it because I needed the credit. And I just wanted to get out of the way. And because if it was that early, I could go work out afterwards.
Oh, that makes sense.
So it gave me a reason to wake up that early. It gave me a reason to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we studied the history of dance. And at one point, there was a man named LeBron. And LeBron...
LeBron James.
LeBron James. LeBron came up with a notation system to record dances. Just like how music has like scales and everything. So we have a notation system, so you can write down music on a page and people will be able to recreate it later. LeBron came up with a way to discuss movement so that you could recreate it later before there were, you know, videos or anything like that.
Right.
And the reason that was important was because you couldn't actually learn dance unless you learned it from like a master, right? The masters had their own styles. They had their own schools,
right,
like
right.
like a samurai sensei. It's like, I'm going to learn from LeBron.
The name's Bon. LeBron James.
LeBron. But he created this system mm-hmm. to record dances. And that eventually, you know, that evolved to the point where you would have these great schools of dance in Russia and in France doing ballets. And so eventually we reached a point in history where we had to learn like art history alongside mm-hmm. dance history. And eventually we reached a point where people were no longer like into these ideas, right? Ballet had become a symbol of the upper class, right? Dance was something that not anybody could do. It was something that rich people did. And so when rich people started getting overthrown in Europe, like in France and in Russia, those things were get wrecked.
Take the L.
Big L. When that started happening, dance, it's kind of a romantic period, right? The romantic period was very much a reclaiming of these things for the people. And this is such a generalization. We're freaking blowing through massive art movements. Go look these things up on your own. But these things became something that anybody could do. It became more democratized. And with video being invented, it became even more democratized. Anybody could learn a dance by just watching someone else do it, right? You had the video. You could do it.
Insert TikTok.
Insert TikTok. then the Fire Nation attacked. But the point is that we reached a point where anybody could dance, so it was no longer a symbol of wealth, power, or even like prestigious training. Mm-hmm. I've said prestigious really weird, but but what it was just an expression. Anybody could dance. And so that's the way that I think of modern art. Modern art and modern dance go hand in hand, because at that point people started saying, okay, we've had these world wars happen, and I've decided that I don't know if I like the structure that came before us. I don't know if I like these things. And so modern art and modern dance became this free-flowing rebellion against the structure and prestige of previous times.
Interesting.
Yes. And that is why someone taped a banana to a wall, right? We started asking the question, what is art? And the answer came back as subjectivity, mm-hmm. right? Just anybody can define art any way that they want.
Yeah. The problem with modern artists, they're basically English majors. So they're completely worthless.
That's so mean.
Yeah, you're going to edit your paper, but it's okay, Grammarly.
This is brought to you by Grammarly. With Grammarly Plus.
No, because... like, lost my immediate train of thought.
They're like English majors?
I don't like English majors.
Oh.
Because, sorry, wait, modern artists. They're pointless. Because they're just good with words. They can just explain a deep emotion that they have and use metaphor to relate it to your own life and then say, and that's art. It's like, what?
No, it's... what the frick?
You just use flowery words to say, like, oh, the plainness of the wall represents the plainness of the variety in your life. Therefore, you are the wall. And when we add a splash of blue color, that is the variety.
Gross.
That... right, like, that, like, that is actually something that someone would describe.
There were... a handful of writers who also went through this. I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, mm-hmm. but Ernest Hemingway at one point challenged the idea of being, have I told you about this? He challenged the idea of what a story is, right?
Oh, yes. The dead baby one.
Dead baby. Yeah. The Million Dollar Outline by Dave Wolverton. He talks about like what actually makes a story, right? Yeah. What actually makes a story a story? Because you can't just write, you know, he said, like, people do. People just write, you know, the middle of a story and leave out the beginning and end. And they, you just implied this guy hangs himself. And he says, well, that's fine. And these guys were certainly pushing the envelope in what a story was by saying, you know, that the six word story of baby shoes for sale, never worn. It's like, sure, you can come up with a story out of that, but it's not. Like, it's not really something that you're going to want to sell or someone's going to want to buy, right? Like, you're pushing the boundaries of the medium while not necessarily, like, telling a good story.
Right. And I feel like there's a balance because it's like poetry, right? Mm-hmm. Where there is really good poetry.
Heck yeah.
And there is really garbage poetry, and it still is a part of the poetry world.
Right.
I'm like,
right.
No. You gotta rhyme. That's like, you are killing everyone off by not even taking the time to rhyme, right? Two, you're being really boring. You're like saying like how hard your life is, and it's like, that's cool, but guess what? Everyone else's life is 100% the same.
Yeah, I love the line in Miyazaki's Princess Mononoke, where the emperor's agent is like, so you're cursed? So what? The whole world's cursed, right? Yeah. Like, it's, yeah, man, everything sucks for everyone.
Right, everyone has a different challenge that they have to overcome in their life, and when they do, it just opens up three more.
Right.
So it's like, right, you're not special for having a bad day, right?
Gosh, dang. It's a great point. But the do you remember, did you go to Sam's Warp and Weave presentation with us?
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So Warp and Weave is a journal for art and writing, mm-hmm, at UVU that anybody can apply to and anybody can submit to and be published in. And Sam, Marin, he's a sibling right between us, right? So me, Sam, Marin. Mm-hmm. Sam has had a lot of his stuff published in it before. Sam writes stuff, and I know, Sam, if you're listening, you know this, but Sam writes stuff that is not particularly my favorite. It is not my thing. It's not something that I read normally. It's not something that I normally enjoy. And so Sam will send me these stories, and I'll be like, these are fine, Sam. These are good. You should submit these, right? Like, you know, get some feedback. You know, you can improve. But then we showed up to this event, and Sam presented his, and he was great. His voice and his inflection was great. His story was like...
His story was actually super interesting.
Yeah. It was like he was writing like Old Testament lore, right? He was like he was reading myth.
It was really pretty. And he has like this like deep voice, and he's, you know, pretty tall. And
yeah, so, he has a real presence. Sam has a lot of presence.
So it's like when other people were presenting, it was like, wah, wah, wet banana. And then like Sam stands up and he like says his beautiful.
He says like the highwayman met the man in gold and white robes and said, who art thou? And the man in gold and white robes said, I am the sun. I am the day and order incarnate. And I'm like, dang, this is actually kind of fun to listen to. And then other people would get up and be like, there's a man and he points at me. It's death, right? And it's like, oh, yeah, I figured.
The only guy who really points is death.
Right, no one else is pointing. It's kind of rude. Like, death gets a free beef, right? He's
death.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But we're not just here to trash on people that we don't like. We're not saying that. We're saying that there's lots and lots of ways to do art. And when Marin saw this lady who saw this fellow student of hers who had...
I don't actually know who it was. You can look her up.
We found her Instagram, but we did. I don't remember her name though.
A little sus.
We found her Instagram. Haley's amazing at finding people. I don't know how she does it, but she does. And
reincarnated investigator.
She's terrifying, Haley. So, okay, all my friends. Really quick tangent. I'm so sorry. I know you're here to listen to a podcast, but when I married Haley, and when all my friends also started getting married, mm-hmm, they had we all show up to some bachelor party and they asked the question like, okay, now that we all have wives, which wife would win in a cage fight, right? The kind of questions that guys ask each other. And
Makes sense.
Was resoundingly Haley. Everyone was like, Haley with prep time is the most dangerous individual in this, yeah, in this room.
She's kind of a littler lady, but she's scurry.
Okay, Haley is incredible at finding things out that she really shouldn't know about, right? Like she's like finding people and finding out secrets about, mm-hmm, them. She's amazing at finding out like at just like weird details of getting rid of bodies, right? I think most women who listen to true crime podcast can. And then on top of that, she's really good at being mean. Not to me, never to me, but she'll say things like, she'll be watching a TV show and she'll like see someone walk on screen and she'll be like, you have balls of cotton. It's like, oh my gosh.
That's funny.
This ringing is brutal.
I'm gonna use that one.
You have balls of cotton. It's friggin' good. I mean, we were watching like Grey's Anatomy, so she doesn't say this to real people, but
that's fair.
She like
I can think of
like,
at least five characters. She,
right,
to.
Yeah. But she like, you know, some character will be on, she'll be like, this guy looks like he mispronounces names of cheese, right? It's like, geez, that is so specific and
Shakespearean
mean.
Insults, if you will.
Haley's insults are Shakespearean. So she was, but Haley was like shocked. She was like, what? I'm like, no, I'm nice. I'm a good person.
Ding.
That's why we based Bales off of her.
Yeah.
She is so sweet. I love you, baby. But the go ahead. You looked like you were going to say something.
She would make a great researcher.
Yes, she would. She'd be a fantastic researcher. Haley started making color.
What did we break off that from? She can find something on anything.
We were going to talk about subjectivity, right?
Yes, yes.
So,
Start there.
So,
I opened my water bottle.
So, subjectivity is just a bullcrap philosophy. Right.
Yep.
It is just this.
What's objectivity?
So objectivity, right? Being objective. Don't Google it, Marin. Don't Google it right now in the middle of the. Come on. You even have caps lock on. Objectivity is being able to just recognize something. Right? It's being able to look at something and say.
You mean to be influenced by personal feelings, tastes, or opinions? Of course, I know what you're talking about.
Thank you, Google.
No, that was all me.
Subjective.
Edit it out.
Subjectivity. I'm the one editing.
Edit.
So, subjectivity is this. I'm going to interpret it the way that I want,
mm-hmm.
and therefore, art is whatever I say it is. And I think that is not a great way to approach anything. Actually, why is that, Marin?
God.
Right, so we have a pretty strong faith, and we have pretty strong faith, and we have pretty like hard and fast rules about what is real and what's not.
Yes.
Right. And so when someone says this is my truth, it just grinds my gears.
So
holy
it's
cow!
Not true is what you're saying.
Right. What I'm hearing is that is my opinion. That's what I hear.
That's something that I believe. You're like, oh, okay, just say that, please.
Yeah. Because saying my truth is like saying...
this is art to me.
This is, yeah.
This is, you know, it resonates with my soul. You're like, great, put it in a journal, burn the journal.
Look, some things do resonate with people. Something like Frozen 2. I thought Frozen 2 was... pretty meh. Mm-hmm. But there was one song, the Next Right Thing, right, is the last song in the whole movie, and it's just mm-hmm. Anna singing to herself while she's depressed in a cave, right? Why did you laugh at that?
I haven't seen it.
No. Oh, okay. Well, then my description is actually pretty spot on. But I said, like, I didn't like that song. I thought it was a pretty miserable, like, last song for your movie. Mm-hmm. And I said that to Haley's sister, and Haley's sister said, actually, I found it very inspiring. I've struggled with depression. And this was something that really resonated with me. Mm. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, actually, good for you. Like, I'm glad someone liked that scene because I really didn't. But you can say that without saying, like, this is my truth. And you can't, like, attack this truth. Like, saying something is a truth means that you cannot argue with it.
Yeah.
Saying something is your opinion means that it's something that, whether or not it's good or whether or not it's flawless, it's something that you liked.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... The problem is with a lot of people these days, especially, is that people found themselves on things that they feel and they are what they feel. But the thing is, you're human and the things that you feel are temporary. And so when those things go away, because they will, because you're alive and things just change. It's like the song by Rebecca Sugar, like everything changes.
Everything stays.
Everything stays.
Everything stays, yeah.
It's like... it just will rotate with the seasons, right? So it's like when that thing goes away, you get confused again. Instead of founding yourself on faith and like real things.
I always play devil's advocate for you on this podcast because I agree. I agree. I do think that when you have a foundation of faith and when you do have a foundation of belief in something, it makes it a lot easier for you to go through the world.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you don't share our faith, you do have to admit that certain things are eternal. Certain things are true. And some certain things, even if they're not a physical reality, you have to admit their value. For example, like honor, right? Honor is, I mean, it is like the whole theme of these stupid books by not Brandon Sanderson, but his ghost is by an AI that has taken over the body of Brandon Sanderson.
By a group of people who vote on each decision. This book is bureaucracy.
Honor, things like honor or justice or
integrity.
These are things, there's a Terry Pratchett quote, right? Death is a death quote. Mm-hmm. If you ground down the entire universe to its atoms, you will never find a single atom of justice. And yet, it's something that we need to believe in. It's mm-hmm. something that we need to understand. Like, it has to be there. We have to believe in it as people.
Right. So it's like when you strip away art from the feelings, what is it? It is form. It is structure. It is truth that we relate to. So when things like just a bunch of pictures of cats in different media, while the entire time you're there, there's like a meow in the background, like being played on
audio. I'm sorry,
audio.
What?
Yes, there's like just.
This person doesn't own a cat. There's no way that
they do. No, they've always had cats that sit on the wall, and it always had to be Ginger because she has red hair.
But, oh my gosh, this person has main character syndrome. Oh man.
But it's like, yeah, when you strip all of that away, who are you really? Like, if you don't have a cat.
Apparently nobody if you're this lady.
Or like if you don't, you know, have a banana that's taped to the wall. What if there's no banana? What if it's just a wall? Like a normal building.
Right. What are things at their very core?
Right. And I think that's where art truly rings true. So I kind of want to pivot into shows and like books.
Sure.
And things that we've seen in media. What is the truth that we experience that gets us to relate? Because when you're doing art, that is, at least in animation, in the classes that I've taken and stuff, the things that we talk about are all, what's the truth in this gesture, right? What's the truth in this expression? What's the truth in this scene, even though it's completely fiction?
These are good classes.
Yeah, I know,
gosh,
right?
Dang. Well, so we're talking about something called resonance.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, million dollar outline, Dave Wolverton, go read it. But resonance is this concept that certain things resonate with you. Certain things resonate with everyone,
mm-hmm.
right? While Frozen 2 did not resonate with me, it resonated with someone else. Certain things resonate with everybody. They are human experiences. WALL-E resonates with a lot of people, with a grand majority of people. I actually really, really like WALL-E as an example, because WALL-E is a story about a 9-to-5 guy, right? Like, this is me interpreting. This is my left side of my brain interpreting this idea.
Yeah.
It's about a 9-to-5 guy who's working and sees no end in sight, right? But he doesn't care. He's someone who will just do what needs to be done because it needs to be done.
And he finds the little beauty in the world.
Right.
What's barely left.
Right. And because of that, that makes him incredibly valuable, right? Mm-hmm. The plant that he has inside of him is just a metaphor for the fact that WALL-E is a valuable member of society, one that is no longer appreciated in a society where you don't need to work.
Someone who has hope, someone who likes, you know, the little things like Hello Dolly and
yeah.
just love and looking for that.
That's two Hello Dolly references
little,
in one episode. Look
piece.
At us.
Oh my gosh. Most people haven't seen it. Did you
really?
Know that? Yeah. I've said Hello Dolly to my coworkers or to my classmates and they're like, what's that? I'm like, it's the thing from WALL-E.
It's the thing for, okay, we moved when WALL-E released, and mm-hmm. the only DVD that we had that I'd kept, mom said, you can choose a DVD for us to keep with us as we drive to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I chose Hello Dolly. And so the weekend that WALL-E comes out, Hello Dolly had been the only thing we had watched for a while. And so I felt like the universe was calling to me. But right, WALL-E as a character appreciates all of these things. And Eva is a very powerful, capable, she doesn't need WALL-E in her life, right? She's a businesswoman, right? This is a Hallmark movie.
Business.
But she grows
she
to-
She meets Sawdust Guy.
She meets Sawdust
oh
Guy, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
She grows to appreciate WALL-E for his integrity, for his sincerity, for his hard work, for his persistence.
Mm-hmm.
She grows to appreciate these qualities in him. And yeah, they're robots. But the whole society that they arrive at also is lacking those qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And so they also grow to appreciate those things.
Right.
That's resonance. These themes resonate with people on a core level.
Yeah.
And people who don't like, and so sometimes we will, I will hear people who say, I don't like this character, I do like that character. And I have to ask, why do you dislike Katara?
Actually, this is crazy because I just have been watching Avatar just last week. I was at Thompson's uncle's house and me and his little cousin, we were watching Avatar together and eating popcorn for breakfast. And,
heck yeah.
And what was crazy is I was watching it and I was like, I actually don't hate Katara like I did when I was younger.
Like you did a few weeks ago when we talked about it.
Well, the only time I had watched it last was probably about 3 years ago.
Huh.
And I was like, Katara isn't a bad character. Katara's the mom character. And when I was a little bit younger, I didn't want her just telling people to forgive or to be soft or to move on. You know, like, let's just, you know, hold it together. And
right.
And I was like, oh, crap, that actually is kind of a truth, though.
Right, yeah.
That, like, that is something that we need to do. And when I was, you know, 5 years ago in high school, that's something I didn't want to hear.
Right.
And now I'm that character.
For other people.
For other people. I mean, like, that's something I want to do. I want to nurture people. I want to
cultivate.
I want to feed people and be there for them and listen to their problems and go on walks and, like.
It doesn't sound so bad, actually.
Right. And, like, that is actually a good person and that is a good character. And while she does kind of get on her high horse sometimes, it's sure. just because she's a kid.
Right, yeah, because she believes in these ideals to such a degree that, first of all, she believes in them to such a degree that she does pull everyone else around her.
And it conflicts with the other personalities in the group
right.
that don't have that exact core.
It's because she is the core. Like, in the group, she acts as that emotional core. It's why the episode, The Southern Raiders, where she goes to find the man who killed her mom, mm-hmm. that episode is so good, and it's excellent. It's truly excellent because it pits Katara against her very inner, like, core values, her very
right.
core values. Am I actually going to take out revenge? Am I actually going to kill someone who killed my mother? Am I going to become the person that I hate the most?
Mm-hmm.
That is why, like, that, because that scene takes the things that we have resonated with the entire show and it actually puts them to the test.
We watched the episode, the library one.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So it go, and the one after it.
The spirit library. Oh, that, those are excellent. The spirit library and then the one where they're lost in the desert.
When they're lost in the desert. And
I was going to bring those up, actually.
So Aang, he goes into the Avatar state and
she talks him down.
And Katara's like, oh no, excuse me. Sokka's like, everybody run! And the sand people are like, what's going on? And
right.
They follow Sokka. and they run. But then, like, Katara doesn't say anything. She just, like, grabs Aang, and she pulls him down, she gives him a hug, and then they make it through the desert.
Right, like, and Aang is, like, comatose, like, basically. He is just, like, dead inside for the rest of that episode. He's hurt himself, right, because he's gone against his own morals.
Right.
By attacking these people. He feels like he's failed Appa, he feels like he's failed his friends. Like, Aang is basically useless for the rest of the episode. And so is everyone, right? Like, Toph can't see in the sand, and Sokka is high on cactus juice, which is great. But that episode is incredible because it shows, like it shows Katara in the very worst situation still believing that things can be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the good stuff.
And her just, like, her forgiveness of when people lash out and her just kind of hope that they can go on.
Right.
That the characters, like, learn over, like, the next couple of episodes, like the Serpent's Pass.
Right. Yes, Aang has the scene about hope.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so she has that even though kind of in a stagnant way. Not stagnant.
Static.
Static way where she just, like, this is what I believe in. We're still going to be okay. And mm-hmm. then they just keep going. And I'm like, that was actually really great. So, like, the truth in her character, it rings very true.
Yeah.
So, like, as a viewer, then I'm like, to keep a group together or to cultivate and nourish the people around you, you need those specific things.
Right.
And that's why that show is so impactful.
Yes. We could make this just an Avatar The Last Airbender podcast. Uh-huh. We really could. The writing in that show is masterful.
It's so good.
But, excuse me. But you're right. And I think that certain things might not resonate with you because they're truths that you don't want to admit, or they're truths that you don't want to face.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that you kind of have brought that up, because I wanted to talk about one other thing before we run out of time, and that is the death of the author. This is a concept by a French philosopher. We just keep coming back to these guys. Sam and I frequently joke about how much we are going to...
Nerd John.
We're going to beat up French philosophers in the afterlife. We just don't like those guys. The idea is that once you create a product, once mm-hmm. you create a story, once you create a piece of art, when you have created art and you send it out into the world and you no longer are able to change it, then you no longer have control over how people interpret it. So essentially, if you release the piece and someone says the blue curtains mean that this guy is sad, right? And then the author says, no, they just mean blue curtains.
Right.
It doesn't matter what the author meant anymore, because the author no longer has the opportunity to clarify that. So it is now up, because that interpretation and how the audience interprets it is what's more important than what the author intended. I think that that is a really good idea, but I think it falls short just a little bit.
Okay.
It's been a long time since I read the article, so maybe he makes his point too, the French philosopher. But I think that there are certain interpretations that have more validity than other interpretations. So if someone wants to interpret something, actually, I'm not going to make that example. If someone wants to interpret a character's relationship as a mother-child relationship, like Katara and Aang, and I say, no, I interpret that as a romantic relationship, my stance actually has more ground to stand on, right? There's more validity to my argument than someone else's. And I think that other people's, sometimes people are going to make crazy claims about a piece of art. And it's because we have this subjectivity in our culture right now, and subjectivity in our art right now. So someone will say, I interpret this character as gay, right? And that's very, very popular these days. The gay community loves to claim characters as gay. And recently I've seen going around a lot recently, Jesus was gay. No, he was not. All right. Jesus was not gay. But it's
the humidity.
The humidity. But this claiming of these things, interpreting things in this way, has further pushed this modern sensibility of personal interpretation, personal expression over form and purpose and truths.
It's exegesis and, oh, I forget the other one. Eisegesis. So there's exegesis and eisegesis.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to need to spell these because I thought you were saying something else. Exegesis is E-X-E-G-E-S-I-S, and eisegesis is E-I-S-E-G-E-S-I-S. Go ahead.
So the difference between those two things, we talk about them a lot when you're doing scripture study, is what is the contextual thing that's happening that gives an explanation for what we are learning in the scriptures, versus eisegesis, which is your own personal interpretation on your own experiences as you read this. So when it says, line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little kind of thing. You look at the context and you know, you're reading the whole chapter. And I mean, we just read Isaiah and we just did a lot of things. And you're like, the destruction of the world, you got to really follow God.
Yeah. Isaiah goes through the whole civilization cycle a few times.
Right. But you look at that context and you're like, oh, he's saying that you don't have to do it all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We're building on it a little bit. But then eisegesis is saying this is like me doing this thing and I have to practice every day, because that will, if I write one page a day, then I will have a full book by the end of the year.
We've talked about this briefly as well in a previous episode. We talked about how characters like Miles Morales, Miles Morales and I have like one thing in common. It's that we're both guys. Right. But Miles Morales is a character whose story resonates very deeply with everyone. And so exegesis, right, context, his story is very different from mine. Right. His personality, his life is very, very different from mine.
Right.
However, eisegesis, am I doing this right? Eisegesis, I understand the fear of taking a leap of faith. I understand the fear of believing in myself enough and trusting myself enough to do the right thing.
Right. Yeah. So that's kind of like taking it in like a different way. You know, like you can apply it in lots of different things, but it's like when you're looking at the context of you know, the blue curtain thing, you're like, the context is that the curtains are blue because the guy likes the color blue.
And right, right.
Which it says the previous page.
Yeah.
But, you know, the eisegesis would be like, oh, you know, he's sad. I'm sad. Blue.
Right. It's literal interpretation versus, or it's objective and subjective, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the example I thought of while we were, because you told me this was going to be the subject of this episode, and I thought a lot about this.
Yes.
This is Inception. The end of Inception.
Yes.
You know exactly where I'm going with this. The end of Inception, he spins the top, and the movie ends, mm-hmm. right?
And it just wobbles.
It just, the tiniest, tiniest bit.
Yep.
And so I asked Dad. Dad started watching PG-13 movies once he'd finally run out of PG movies to watch. And
and then he decided he didn't want to anymore.
Yeah, I was like, oh, whatever. But he watched Inception. And he really liked it. And I asked him, what do you think about the ending? Was it a dream or wasn't it? And he said, it clearly was not a dream. Okay. Like the story doesn't work if it's not a dream. And it's a great like point, you know, very Nathan Jensen, very practical, very engineer brained, just like it needs to work. Okay. It needs to function. And it's why we think the way that we do. But it made me think a lot about this, right? It made me think a lot about, like, Christopher Nolan clearly decided to put that question in our mind, mm-hmm. right? He clearly decided to lead, and that, you know, and I could talk about Inception all day. It's my favorite movie. But he clearly decided that was the last thing he wanted us to think about, is this a dream or isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer that I came up with was, it doesn't matter whether or not it's a dream.
Right.
Right. Because whether or not it's a dream, you still need to act honorably. You still need to act with integrity and truthfully and with all of your heart, right? That is the answer that I came to. I agree with Dad. I don't think that it works on if it's a dream. Like, I don't think the story functions very well. It's not a very satisfying ending. But I do think that the message that the question that he's asking the audience is leaving that question up to our interpretation. He's right. Saying, you get to choose. So why would he do that if there's a very clear, correct answer?
Well, just if you look at everything that Christopher Nolan does, it's all very artistic because he is really good at using the truths that...
He's an English major.
I know. That's so sad.
So sad for him. It's so embarrassing for him.
It's so embarrassing. It's okay. You've come back. you've made a journey of 1,000 tears, 1,000 woes, and we're, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Forgive you.
We're so glad you came back to us.
Yeah, yeah, it's gonna be okay.
So make your point.
But he's really good at using the truths that we experience as people, and then making it into a puzzle and twisting it around,
mm-hmm.
and to make us want the truths to end up being the victor at the end.
Right.
So at the end of Inception, you want to be like, well, yeah, he did the right thing. So in the end, he should get the happy ending.
Right. He should have his kids, and he should be able to move on from mm-hmm. his wife. This is, you make a great point. That's exactly what happens in The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight, the big final boat scene, is not a battle between Batman and Joker. It is a battle between two values, right? It's a battle between these like cosmic forces of like order and chaos,
right?
Of like society and animalistic behavior. Mm-hmm. That's exactly, yeah, like he builds up these whole movies so that you're not actually rooting for the character at the end. You're rooting for a value and for a truth to be true. You desperately want that thing to resonate.
And it's incredibly exhausting.
Yeah.
Because you're not rooting for the characters anymore. You're rooting for what they believe in. You're like, just let that win.
All right,
just
please.
Let honor
please.
Win. Right? And that's why, I don't know, I've been watching a lot of anime recently because I've just had things suggested to me, and I like to watch things so I can talk about them with, you know, my friends and stuff. And that's why a lot of Americans don't like anime.
Hmm.
Because I think so. Because they don't, it's not a truth for them.
Oh, so you're saying that anime deals with cultural truths and cultural stigmas and kind of groundings that we as Americans struggle with.
Right. So like a lot of people I've talked to watch Spirited Away and they're like, I don't get
it.
Like it's a really fun movie and like I love the characters and the animation is really pretty, but I don't understand it.
That was me.
And I'm like, yeah, I guess that's true. But like in Japan, that's like a story that they would understand. It's using mm-hmm. their culture. It's using the values that they think are mm-hmm. are more important and stuff. And so it's like, yes, we can relate to, oh, I forget her name. She's really cute.
Me too. I'm also cute.
Straight away.
She's voiced by Lilo.
Chihiro. Whenever like Chihiro is trying to do the right thing, you're like, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I know that. She's cool.
Right, yeah.
But like we don't get the other things that are happening.
Right.
First
of all, it is a translation issue. I watched the movie with some friends. We watched it in English, but we couldn't it had it on like a DVD, mm-hmm. like an old DVD. So it had the dub or had the subtitles for the Japanese dub underneath the English and it was really good. There's a lot about that movie that is completely lost in translation. And I don't mean that as a pun either. Like it is culturally, there's a lot of things that are lost in translation.
Yeah.
The story actually has many similarities to Orpheus and Eurydice from Greek mythology.
Yes.
Lots of similarities there.
You said Orpheus and I was like.
Orpheus. Many similarities to Orpheus. to Orpheus. But when I went and watched some video essays, I'd gone through like a phase where I watched a ton of Studio Ghibli movies because different siblings recommended them. And then I watched all these video essays and then I rewatched them with Haley. And it made way more sense. Mononoke and Porco Rosso and especially Spirited Away. I was very deeply touched by Spirited Away, but it was because I understood what values and what messages they were actually trying to send.
Right.
Because those were the things that Japan has been struggling with for centuries and centuries.
That kind of raises a kind of a question in my mind that is truth determined by culture?
I think cultures have to deal with different truths. It's my favorite joke. The easiest problems to solve are somebody else's. We geographically, we end up struggling with different things, mm-hmm. right? We live in a desert, okay? Utah is a desert. It is a barren wasteland. It is.
Someone save me.
when Brigham Young looked out over the valley and said, this is the place, they don't tell you that it actually ended with a question mark, right? It was like, this is the place?
That's not true. Nani?
Nani?
Nandesuka?
Utah desu.
Utah desu.
It is... We live in a barren wasteland. And same thing with Nauvoo. Nauvoo, we're talking about church history here. Nauvoo is another city that was not habitable. Okay. People were dying left and right in that stupid swamp.
Yeah.
But because of that, our cultures have actually evolved around this idea of we are the shining beacons in a wilderness of death, right? That is the way that this culture has evolved. And it's the way that we think about things. Japan is a country of limitations and of isolation and of pride and of possession, right? Taking and
tradition.
And tradition.
Yeah.
And so they are dealing with the same truths that we're dealing with, but they are dealing with them in a much different context than we are. A really good example of this is like Star Wars, right? Star Wars takes, I mean, Star Wars rips so much right out of the samurai.
Everything.
But especially the prequels, the Jedi are these symbols of honor. If you don't look at the Jedi as just space wizards with light swords, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at them as samurai, then they mean something different.
Space samurai.
Right, they're space samurai and space monks, right? They're Buddhist samurai, mm-hmm. right? If that's what you want to think about them.
Yeah.
And if you look at it from that perspective, their characters change a lot. I don't think the West has quite caught up with that idea, is that there is like, there are certain values of balance and of harmony that the Jedi represent.
Right.
And so I'm rambling. That's my point.
I think we should, to kind of wrap it up, say how us as creators can interpret all of this information mm-hmm. and use it for ourselves.
Right. Million Dollar Outline, Dave Overton. Has a part where he talks about giri, which is the Japanese form of honor, uh-huh. right? And he wrote it so well that when his books were trying to be turned into a movie overseas, they were like, you understand honor better than anyone else. The way that we understand these things is we actually have to seek truth, right? We have to understand that we have to find truth in everything that we can do. You and I find truth through our religion, right? Mm-hmm. And I encourage you, fair listener, to also do that.
There's a lot of truth to find in religion.
There's a lot. But whether or not you do search for truth in religion, there are things that are true. And finding the things that resonate and finding the things that you disagree with and trying to find the resonance in those things. We talked about this before, right? Consuming a lot of different media and critically analyzing it for what is good and what is not is, I think, super necessary.
I think also on top of that, of knowing history, of not just taking things at face value when someone says, oh, this person is the worst congressman of all time. It's like, okay, go find the worst congressman of all time, like actually, and you know, figure out why, right? Mm-hmm. And then like apply those things. Like same thing with movie, of people being like, oh, this movie blows. You're like, yeah, but have you seen the other stuff that they've made?
Like, right. Michael Bay. All right. Michael Bay is that's his name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Michael Bay is a bizarre director to follow because at one time, sometimes he's so incredibly cringe that you can't even like take any of his stuff seriously. And then sometimes he makes stuff that's just so awesome and so much fun that you can't help but enjoy yourself.
You're like, this is fun.
This is
like, I'm having a good time.
And so I think you're right. Like actually giving context, I think context is like half the battle, right? It sounds like that if you actually do want to understand why something is the way that it is, you do need context for it.
Yeah. And you just have to find the exegesis and the eisegesis of everything. Like look for the objective ways to analyze things and then look for the subjective ways. Like I watched She-Hulk. Objectively, it is bad. I do not suggest watching it. I did really enjoy it. It was entertaining. I would never watch it again. I would never recommend it to anybody. But I was like, they have elements in it that were fun to watch. So it's like, don't just get caught up in being like, oh, I got to find all of the raw material to make my house. Yeah. You're like, it's okay. It's okay.
Right.
Like a lot of things can be fun and there's truth in that fun that you can still take and put into your own work.
Absolutely. Dad always would say, he would always talk about cat poop brownies, right? He'd say like, do you really want to do or watch that movie or do that thing? He's like, because even if there is good stuff in it, it's like having a brownie with cat poop in it. Sure, there's only one tablespoon or one teaspoon of cat poop, but, and there's, you know, there's, the rest of it is chocolate brownie, but are you really going to...
Do you still want to eat one teaspoon of cat poop?
Right.
No.
No, you don't. You really, really don't. But what you do want to do is when you do end up consuming some kind of media that you went in with the best intentions and you went in giving it the best chance and it's not just one teaspoon, right?
Right.
And a lot of it is bad. There is good stuff that you can find in it. There's a lot that you can take from it that is resonant. With humanity, and finding those things and learning how to tell stories around those things is, it's a part of the form. Right. It's a part of the art.
And kind of with that, it's like, where are you telling the story? Because we touched on that briefly, because each culture is going to interpret those truths in a different way.
Right. Like
they're going to live it differently, not live their truth. They are living truth dependent on their culture.
Right. Right. Honor looks different on the battlefield than it does in a garden. Right.
Right.
Honor is it,
that was actually really pretty.
Thank you.
Like that. Was that someone else?
No, that was me. That was me
that,
right
that,
now.
That was John.
That was John.
Wow.
Well, it comes from the phrase, it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war, right? You need to learn.
Woof.
Yeah, it's a big, but it's saying like when if you, you I'm not going to get into that philosophy, but it's the same, right? When you are a creator, you need to understand how these truths interact with everything that you're doing. You need to see how there is a context around just art and reality and the Ouroboros of ideas that happen in culture.
And if you don't have that truth, then you're going to make bad art. You're going to make bad books. Yeah. You're going to fill an entire room with different pictures of the same cat.
Yeah, because you think that that truth is more important than anything else. You are presenting an idea to people that is unsatisfying, unresonant, and unentertaining, because you believe that this truth is the ultimate thing that you could possibly have.
Right, and I'm not saying that was like the epitome of this girl's like life and experience and stuff, and
sure.
That's why she was trying to.
And we are being dramatic.
Say,
I'll admit that we're being dramatic.
But it's like it was supposed to be a love letter. And we all know what love letters are, and there's a specific truth in that
yes.
I was expecting to experience.
Love letters are about devotion. It's about honesty. It's about perseverance. It's about
a lot of rawness.
Yeah.
It being, what's the word? Isaac hates it.
Vulnerable?
Vulnerable.
It is. Yeah, and when you create, if you want to write a love letter and everything is sanitized and curated and... When it's this, it's not spontaneous. When it doesn't feel like it's leaping from your bosom.
It's just the same thing again and again, and again in like, different fonts.
It's like getting a Hallmark card for your friggin' birthday, right? I mean,
from your mom,
from your spouse, right? It's like, no, don't get me wrong. I think it can work. Right? It can.
There's some pretty goofy Hallmark cards.
There's some goofy cards, but like write a love note. Right, I stumbled on one of this. This is the last thing I'll say, and then we should wrap up. I stumbled on one of Haley's love letters that she wrote me while we were dating, and it was just it was vulnerable, right? It was the most. I'm not going to get into everything that she said, but it was just this raw. I don't know what to do with myself with you, but all I know is that I want to do whatever's next with you. It was just this.
That's beautiful.
Commitment. This beautiful, beautiful mm-hmm. commitment, and that was a truth. That was something that you understand. When I say that, you get it. You
yeah.
get it.
You're like, yeah! That's the sound my heart makes.
Does an anime voice? I'm John Jensen.
And I'm Maren. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast.
You can find us on Twitter, Spotify, YouTube. You can find Shepherd Called Bales on shepherdcalledbales.com. You can find my D&D writing on DriveThruRPG. And you can find us on the next episode. Thanks so much for watching.
Stay creative.